From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. It sounds like the show open, but it's the weekend podcast open. So you're not listening to a repeat. Repeat's the wrong word. Am I a good marketer?
It's going really well.
It's going really, really well.
It's called a re-air, for anyone that's curious.
Yeah.
But it's not a re-air. He's right. This is Weekend Connections, the podcast.
It is. So, hi. Anyway, let's try this again. Ready? Watch this.
Oh, my gosh.
We are going to literally just keep rolling. Listeners, this is us trying again. From WXXI.
Wait, this is what happens when Evan runs the board.
Okay, I'm just going to pull the music back up and tell you. See, look at that. Can I do that? I don't know how
you're
going to
run out of music. You ran out of music.
I've ran out of music. I'm going to tell you what. This is going to be great. It's the Weekend Connections, the podcast. My concern was if it's the same music, people won't realize. Now I've lost them.
It's labeled differently in the podcast feed.
Well, I'm Evan Dawson. Hi.
Hi. I'm Megan Mack. And I usually do all the technical stuff.
Why don't you tell us what's going on?
Well, Amazon is not coming to New York after all.
I did hear that.
Yes, no doubt you've heard it in recent news that after some opposition to their new headquarters project, Amazon is scrapping the plan to build in Queens.
And some celebrated that decision. Others called it a missed opportunity for New York City and New York State. We wanted to know if it represents a split in the political left, with some centrist Democrats saying that the Amazon deal would have been a good one, while Democratic socialists and their supporters arguing that it was way too much of a giveaway to an already rich company.
In this clip, you'll hear Alfred and Karen Vitale, co-chairs of the Rochester chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. Before them, you'll hear Jeremy Cooney, a Democrat who served as chief of staff for the city of Rochester and a recent candidate for state Senate. But first, Evan reads a letter from a listener who has some pointed thoughts about the Amazon deal.
It's a letter, but it's really an email. I don't know why I wrote letter.
Everything is going really well.
This is an email. Let's listen. Dan writes to the program and says, I appreciate the discussion. It's an important one. However, please avoid framing the issue as a rift on the left. There may be Democratic Party members on either side of whether Amazon deserves to dictate how our cities operate, but the left is against public expense giveaways to the biggest companies and the richest CEOs. The left has never subscribed to trickle-down economics, which is what the deal and others like it amount to. The left sides with the working class over the managerial and political class as a rule. There is no debate about this project on the left. That's from Dan. Jeremy Cooney, do you agree with that?
No, I think it's too broad of a brushstroke to paint. I mean, look, I'm a Democrat. I am so proud to support worker rights. I believe that wage inequality is the root cause of so many social ills in our problem. But I also believe that good policies such as paid family leave, raising the minimum wage, these are democratic principles that can affect the workplace. But at the same time, there is, a practical component that comes into play here where it says companies, whether it's Amazon, Apple, it could be anyone, right? It could be a manufacturing company, right? When they come to communities, they have an opportunity to bring good-paying jobs for residents who are looking for meaningful employment. I mean, look in our own backyard here. We talked about Geneva before, but when you think about some of the software development, Livestiled, and you talk about a Cloud Checker or Datto, right? These are some of the recent investments that we've had in Rochester that have created jobs, bringing talent back upstate that are settling in Rochester and contributing to our local economy. This is a good thing. So I don't think it's fair to paint kind of all Democrats or all left-leaning people are the same. I think we all have our value systems that can be tweaked a little bit, but I do believe that this is about making a good business environment for New York and specifically for upstate New York.
And in other words, Jeremy, you can be pro-worker and also in favor of the Amazon deal?
Yes.
Okay, Karen, can you?
It's problematic, and this is, I was actually going to ask you, Jeremy, why aren't part of the terms of this negotiation that Amazon pay a living wage? Stop hiring itinerant temp workers whom they abuse. We're talking about people who wear diapers to work because they can't get across the warehouse floor in time on their break to go to the bathroom. We're talking about people living in the UK outside Amazon warehouses at Christmas time in tents because there's no housing around the warehouse and they can't afford housing on the wages they're making. There's such a huge divide. Amazon has such a terrible track record of workers' rights. They won't promise promised union neutrality if people want in their people who work for them want to unionize. That's one of the issues that came up in New York mm-hmm. City. Again and again and again, they're paying low wages. They're hiring temp workers from agencies that they don't even count as Amazon workers. So when they tell you what they pay their workers, when they promise $15 an hour to the lowest paid worker, they're not counting the hundreds of thousands of people who are temp workers for Amazon because that helps their bottom line. So no, I don't think you can be in favor of this and say that this is a pro-worker situation where we're giving taxpayer money to Amazon, who treats their workers terribly.
And we have no real historical precedent to say that that is the case. This hasn't happened yet. We haven't seen a benevolent, large, any town in the region, 50-mile radius, you can go to and there may have been a factory. Foster Wheeler in Dansville brings them up. These are things that had provided good jobs until the ROI happens and until it becomes not profitable. The commitment is not to the communities that they're investing in temporarily. So I don't trust this. An MOU, a memorandum of understanding or memorandum of agreement is not a contract.
But can we just have an honest conversation about what the responsibility is and who the stakeholders are on each side of the table? I mean, there's a fiduciary responsibility of the leadership of Amazon to make profits for their shareholders. And we can like that or we cannot like that, but that is the system of our free market capitalist economy that we have. And, you know, that's what it is. And we could...
Alfred and Karen agreeing with you.
It's reliant on government handouts is what you're telling me.
Yeah, they rely on
so
changing
they're the
minds of government.
They're the welfare cheats, right?
But my point is that is the lens that they're coming to the table with. And what is government coming to the table with? It is looking for services and opportunities for the citizens they represent. I don't think that there was either one of the good faith happening on either side of the table in this situation with Amazon, right? Amazon has to come and make a business deal that they feel is in their best interest, right? We already know that New York overall has a reputation for being unfriendly to business, having high taxes. It's expensive to do work and access the labor workforce in New York City. So the way that we offset that from a government perspective is to offer these types of tax incentives. Look, in an ideal world, we wouldn't be offering any type of tax incentive. But that is not the rules of the game that we're playing. No, that is the rules, excuse me, of the game that we're playing.
Well, the rules have been decided. Let's be frank. They haven't been decided by us. They've been decided by the people who profit from it. I mean, this goes back to the entire conversation I had last
time. So Jeremy's saying this is a reality within the game. You guys are saying change the game.
Change the game.
Yeah, change the game.
Do you want to change the game, Jeremy?
Yeah, why not?
Not if we lose 25,000 jobs.
Next, how good do you think you are at forming beliefs rationally? Research shows that most of us don't do it very well. And here is some other data that we found interesting. Nearly a quarter of Americans believe that people from the opposite political party are actually evil, and only 4% of Americans think that people who disagree with them are fair-minded people.
We invited University of Rochester professor of philosophy Zeynep Soysal to join us for a conversation about how we form beliefs and the value of doubting them. In this clip, she explains why many of us struggle to form beliefs rationally, not only in discussions with others, but also on our own.
In general, there are obstacles to forming beliefs rationally at the level of the individual that come from people's biases, people's emotional attachments to certain beliefs, and also just some things like we are just not that good at evaluating certain kinds of evidence. So, for instance, we're really bad at, like, as a human race, not just, you know, at evaluating probabilities. Like, we make certain kinds of mistakes like that all the time. So there's, you know, the base rate fallacy. It's always talked about in discussing how bad people are in general at forming beliefs.
About how likely something is to happen?
Yeah. So, for instance, I mean, these are about test results. So, for instance, let's say you're given this. I mean, let me ask you, for instance, what you think about this. So you're given the following data. Let's say that among women of age 40 and 50 who are being screened for cancer using mammograms, the probability of one of these women having cancer is, let's say, 0.8%. Okay, so it's very low. And if a woman has breast cancer, then the probability that she will have a positive mammogram is 90%. Okay, so a false negative is going to be 10%. There's a 10% chance of a false negative. And if she doesn't have breast cancer, the probability that she will have a positive mammogram, so that's called a false positive, is 7%. And now the question is, a woman has a positive mammogram exam. What's the probability that she has cancer? Now, you guys can think about it, and you can think about it. Most of us are Like our
it's order, very high, isn't
it's
it?
Very high, right? Like, so that's what we think immediately. Because and how do we think this? We think, look, either way, you know, whether she's tests positive or negative, there's roughly a 10% chance of error, right? And so if you get a positive result, that probability that she has cancer given that result is about 90%. It should be something around that level. And that's what most of us said. So if psychologists have studied this, most people say this in response to this kind of prompt that I just asked. Turns out this answer is completely off the reality. So, and people can try to actually calculate this at home if they would like, but given the numbers that I just gave you, given the probabilities, everything that I just told you, the chance of a woman with a positive mammogram to actually have cancer is about 9%. So it's extremely different from this, it's a very high probability that she has cancer, right? So we're really bad at evaluating these kinds of numbers. And the fallacy is called base rate fallacy because we're ignoring that the prevalence of breast cancer among this group, as I said, is very, very low. So it's incredibly unlikely that a woman in this particular group, in this particular population that I said we're considering, 40 to 50 years old, has cancer is extremely low. So of course, having a positive mammogram test makes it much more likely that she has it. But it goes from 0.8% to 9%, not to 90%, as you would have thought. So there are certain things like this that we're just like, and psychologists have studied this, philosophers have thought about this, like we're just bad at assessing certain kinds of probabilistic, statistical evidence, and logical too. So there are plenty of examples of logical fallacies, probabilistic fallacies that we tend to make. So we're bad at that for that reason, even before talking about like emotions getting in. This is nothing about emotional. This is just we're bad at, you know, assessing.
So it's probably good for us to understand about ourselves. Yeah. Whoever's listening right now, and me too, you are probably not good at figuring out probability and understanding likelihood. And this drives people like Nate Silver crazy. Nate Silver has done a couple of things, both in the realm of sports and in politics. He does a lot of predictive analysis based on, in politics, how the polling sets up. So example, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders in the primary in Michigan. He gave Hillary Clinton, you know, something like an 85% chance of winning. Well, Bernie Sanders wins that primary. And people say, well, guess he's not right. Guess he was an idiot. Well, no. 15 times out of 100, Bernie Sanders still wins. That doesn't mean that it never happens. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that he was wrong. In the same way that if you're watching a basketball game in the fourth quarter and one team has an 18-point lead, the stats probably show they have a 97 to 98% chance of winning. Well, there's a comeback, and the other team wins the game. And they go, well, I guess you know nothing about stats. No! What you just witnessed was really improbable within that 1 to 2 to 3% realm, and that's how it works. But people tend to go, well, I guess this guy knows nothing. I guess you were wrong, as opposed to it's 100% or 0%.
Yeah, so these are hard for us to figure out. And notice, I just asked you like what you think immediately, right? Like your response was you weren't thinking about it. You didn't have a pen and pencil.
Yeah.
This was just your...
And I was wrong.
And you were wrong. And I was wrong too. You know, when I think about these cases, my first reaction is something that's like the gut feeling almost about this. And so I think for instance, one lesson, and you know, because you've been asking like how do we become more rational, you know, about this particular kind of example, one lesson is to realize that, you know, we're not that good at doing certain kinds of things off the top of our heads. Like our immediate intuitions concerning certain things can be very misleading. It's important to realize that, and these are things we can train ourselves. It's actually not that hard to do it if you have, you know, a minute to calculate these probabilities, and people can do it, you know, you can do it later. So these are things that can be learned and trained. I think the important thing is to realize, you know, what you think immediately may not be the right thing, especially if you know if there's no good evidence that you're particularly good at probabilities. Maybe you're not a mathematician. You haven't like really trained yourself. Maybe this is, you know, about just realizing our own limitations in certain domains is important.
Let's close the week in review with part of one of the really enjoyable conversations we've had lately. We talked about how language evolves and how words and phrases can pick up entirely new meanings. One example is the word woke.
We sat down with WXXI arts and culture contributor Jeff Spivak, who wrote a piece about using words precisely. But first, you'll hear University of Rochester linguistics professor Maya Abtakian. She begins with a list of words and phrases that her college students gave her. We'll see how many of them you would recognize.
I have some new words.
I want to hear these.
Well, they did give me lit, which is one of the ones that you
I mentioned
came up
before the program that lit was one that kind of trips me up. Lit is, did they give you definitions for them?
Some of them, although I have to admit I can't use any of them in a sentence very well yet.
How many of what percentage of the entries did you know beforehand?
Of this list, maybe 50%.
Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah. Jeff Spivak would have no chance to get to 50%.
Sorry, what does lit mean again?
Lit means cool, good.
Really good, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Something awesome.
A lit party.
It could mean awesome or awfully good.
Yep.
Okay, so there's lit. What else?
They gave me bet.
Bet?
Yep.
B-E-T?
Yep.
What does bet mean?
I think it roughly means I dare you. So you can say you're going to do something and somebody responds bet.
Oh, just the word bet singular.
Yep.
Bet.
I think.
Like a challenge?
Yeah, that's how I took it.
Bet. All right, what else you got?
Clutch. That one I did know.
Clutch?
Yep. Like, that's clutch.
Clutch means like really timely, awesome,
yes.
like needed.
Which I think comes from baseball.
Like you get home, you don't have a six pack of beer in the fridge, Jeff, and but your buddy picked it up and you go, oh, that is clutch. That is so clutch. You would know what that means.
Well,
in that context.
And as you said, baseball, you know, clutch hitting, you know, come on. Yeah.
Which also, by the way, statisticians like Nate Silver pointed out, clutch is not actually
a
thing.
It doesn't, yeah.
Which ruined clutch for you, by the way, in a whole different way. Okay. Professor of talking, keep going here. Our phone is lit up, by the way, now. Now the phone is lit in a different way. Go ahead.
Throw shade.
Oh, throw shade. Yeah, I think we all
Jeff
got throw shade.
Said,
just
yep,
means to kind of disparage, right?
Spill the tea.
Spill the tea? What's spill the tea?
Explain.
Gossip or tell the truth about something.
People are using spill the tea? That sounds like something that, no offense, Jeff, your generation would use.
Yeah, something my mom would say.
Yeah, not even your generation, older generation.
Yeah.
Spill the tea. Okay.
Tea
I've
is really
never
bad.
Heard that. Yeah. I've never even heard that. I've never even
no,
heard
I
that.
I hadn't either.
Okay, spill the tea.
I'm shook.
Shook, I've definitely, yeah, definitely. In fact, I think I used, when did I use shook recently? I've used it watching an athlete who's going to perform and is not clutch, Jeff.
Mm.
I say, they look shook. Like, this, the scene is too big for them.
Yeah.
They look shook. That's what it was. Jared Goff in the Super Bowl. I said to a friend of mine, he looked shook in the first half. Yeah. Okay, so there you go. Okay. Shook.
This is starting to make sense, by the way.
Rattled, shook, not able to perform. Okay?
Diving?
Diving.
For faking it from soccer? I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Well, they talked about a couple. They were I was asking. Actually, what I asked them for was not new words, but things that have gained specificity over time. And one of the things that they gave me was moist.
Oh, that's one that I've been told never to use ever.
Like the word trousers. And you don't use them together either. But I have read that words moist and trousers are two words that people hate. It just sends off...
Yes, I have.
Creepy.
There's a creepiness. My old colleague Norma Holland would always told me, you have to write out the word moist in any script. It's just not allowed to be said on the air, and that's what I've been told. So, okay.
So I might regret that.
You might. Let me interrupt for just a second because we've got like 1,000 phone calls, and I'm not a big fan of hyperbole, but it feels like it's about 1,000. So let's just grab a few of those to help us out here. Drew in Rochester wants to tell us what bet means. Yes, go ahead, Drew.
It actually means to dare someone.
To dare, yeah, to dare someone. Okay.
Just like you said, but I got one other thing, too.
Yeah.
How about tight?
Tight. Something is tight, that means really good, well done, well executed.
And it also means you can be upset, too.
Oh, okay, like uptight.
He was real tight about that situation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so, and what about whip? You know what whip is?
Whip? W-H-I-P?
Yeah. Yep.
No, do I want
educators.
To?
Oh, it's a car.
Whip is a car?
Yes, it is.
Rob Braden, engineer, is nodding. You knew that? A whip is a car? Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, if you hang out with young people and stuff, you kind of like pick up on a lot of the vernacular that they... And those words only last, believe me, a couple months, and then they on to something new. Just like...
Yeah.
What was that word you were talking about? What were you talking about?
Woke, lit, yeah.
Yeah, woke. Well, yeah, woke and lit and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
depends
that's
on what you drive, though, because my car is not whip. It's a Subaru.
Oh, it's a
Subaru Forester.
Did you say a hoopty?
Hoopty, right. There you go, hoopty. Right.
That feels like it's old school. That's what I remember growing up. So, Drew, if I want to say, if I'm like, hey, thanks for picking me up. Thanks for the ride in your whip, or is whip an adjective? Like, that is one whip ride.
Oh, no, you don't want to say that's a whip ride. No, whip,
you don't
whip
do that.
Would be an adjective, yeah. You would just say, hey,
so I could say that is one tight whip. That is one tight whip you got.
Oh, well, yeah, you can say say that. Yeah, I guess you can say that.
What do you drive, man?
I drive an old car. It's a whip.
And that is another flawless edition of Weekend Connections, the most technically sound podcast in the history of ever. You can hear Connections, which is always engineered much better than this one, because I'm not engineering it during the week. That's Rob Braden, and he does an outstanding job. And I've learned nothing from him, but that's Monday to Friday. Weekday afternoons, noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and we're also on WEOS, that's Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM.
And the WXXI mobile app. Getting a lot of honesty and a behind-the-scenes look at what happens in this booth on Fridays. I'm also going to post the bloopers from things they didn't hear while we were recording the middle of the script.
You're not going to post those.
Oh, I will.
It's 5 o'clock
Stay
somewhere.
Tuned after this music
Bye.
Ends. He's Evan,
Bye,
I'm Megan. Bye. Have a good weekend. Stay tuned for bloopers.
Bye.
We need to start over. This sounds terrible.
No, it sounds so good. It's the best we've ever done.